First, sometimes it's anyone's guess what candidates for public office would actually do if elected. In the race for Wisconsin governor, voters have been given more than 120 examples of what they could expect. They're all bills that passed the Republican-dominated state legislature, only to be vetoed by Democratic Governor Tony Evers. As Sean Johnson reports, those bills and many more could become law if Republican challenger Tim Michaels wins in November.
Tony Evers vetoed a total of 126 bills in the last two-year session of the legislature. Since Wisconsin became a state in 1848, no governor has vetoed more bills in a single session. Included on this list were bill after bill that would have made changes to Wisconsin election laws, including by adding hurdles to voting absentee. These were top priorities for GOP lawmakers, and at a September campaign rally, Tim Michaels tells Republican voters they'll be priorities for him.
We are going to take those bills that Tony Evers vetoed. We're going to get them right. I'm going to sign them.
It wasn't just election bills that Evers rejected. He vetoed gun bills, including one that would have proclaimed that any federal bans on assault weapons don't apply in Wisconsin. He vetoed bills that would have chipped away at the safety net, like a plan to trim unemployment benefits down from 26 weeks to as little as 14. At the same rally, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss makes reference to all of them.
It's going to happen, and I promise you, when we are here in 1 year with Governor Michaels, every single thing that Governor Evers has vetoed is going to be considered by the legislature, and hopefully all of it becomes law, because we are back to being the conservative, revolutionary place that Wisconsin was under Governor Walker.
This riles up Republicans. With one election, by winning this one race for governor, a full-speed-ahead conservative agenda could be theirs. But it also means Democrats see Evers as essential to blocking that agenda. Republican lobbyist Bill McCoshin worked for former Republican Governor Tommy Thompson. Even though the former governor had a record of working with both parties, McCoshin said Thompson would brag about the Democratic policies he stopped in order to motivate GOP voters.
It shows the strength of the office and why the office is important. So highlighting that, there's no downside to that, at least in my opinion, and Tommy proved that. You can be out there saying, listen, I stopped all these bad things that you, my base, are against. And that's why you need to fight hard to reelect me.
On the campaign trail, Evers is soft-spoken, low-key. During a recent campaign stop at the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus, Evers asks student supporters, politely, to get out and vote.
And please vote for yours truly, a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I'm always going to be a Badger. Thank you.
His speech here talks about what he's for, including education funding and legalized marijuana. He doesn't talk about vetoes, but in this crowd, he doesn't have to. People say Evers' veto power is part of the reason they're supporting him. Grant Hall, a sophomore studying computer science and data science, worries about the election bills Republicans would sign without Evers.
And I feel like it'll prevent a large number of Wisconsin voters from being able to go out to the polls and have their voice heard.
Rihanna Mukherjee, a senior at the UW-Madison majoring in political science, says that without Evers, Republicans would have too much control.
I think in a democracy, you need balancing voices, and our Republican legislator doesn't balance voices.
In an interview after his speech, Evers says his vetoes reflect his value system, and people know that.
Part of my job going forward, again, the next 4 years, will be to be that goalie and prevent bad legislation from becoming law.
And if he's not governor, Evers thinks those bills will be passed and signed as quickly as possible. In the contentious race for governor, it's one issue where Evers and Republicans seem to agree. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, we've been highlighting different election issues recently on Central Time. Last week, we looked at crime, for example. Another issue that's often top of mind for voters is the economy, and lately, inflation has been a big part of that story. The U.S. is among many Western countries facing long-term inflation, around 8% in the U.S., a bit higher than Canada, a bit lower than Mexico, the U.K., and the Eurozone. We've talked to economists about the factors driving inflation, including the pandemic, supply and demand, and supply chain disruptions, as well as the part played by government spending. Now we're going to get into the political side of inflation and the economy and how candidates and voters are talking about the issue. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How important is inflation and the wider economy for you as a voter? How does it motivate you on election day or when you cast your absentee ballot in advance of it? Who do you blame for high inflation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Maurice Shepard is professor of political science at Madison College. Maurice, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon, Rob.
Well, polling, Maurice, in Wisconsin and around the country shows a lot of interest, a lot of concern about inflation and the economy this time around. And traditionally, the economy is a big deal. How important do you see it being in this midterm election?
Inflation is a major issue in this election, as it is in every election. Just looking at sort of polls coming out of Wisconsin, and I think these would mirror what we see nationally, inflation is the number one issue. Here in Wisconsin, the Marquette poll then would list, and I think it's important to put inflation in context mm-hmm. with the other issues. Second would be crime, once again, gun violence. And then third would be reproductive rights, again, abortion bills, and then education, taxes, and then sort of falling sort of toward the end of the line would be immigration and climate control. But what I would also like to say about in terms of inflation and its relationship to politics is that it's important, I think, to look at this in terms of not all inflation is the same in terms of how we actually measure. And I am not an economist, but inflation is measured by looking at different economic categories. A big one would be that really hits people on a daily basis would be inflation related to food and energy. Those are essential items that everyone needs, and people see and feel that inflation on a daily basis. So while inflation sort of writ large is important in terms of politics, those particular items as they relate to inflation really have a sensitivity to, once again, politics.
I want to look at the governor's race here. Now, a governor doesn't have a lot of control over inflation, but at the only debate in the race for governor last week, both candidates were asked what they would do to help people deal with inflation. Democratic Governor Tony Evers answered first, mentioning that inflation is a global issue impacting people around the world. Here's some of his answer.
And I've been really hoping that the Republicans would come in session and we could do something about it right now. But my plan is this: to mitigate against inflation, we're going to lower our taxes on our middle-class folks in the state of Wisconsin by 10%. We're going to get rid of the minimum markup law on gasoline, which could save people up to 30 cents on a gallon, and also some tax credit issues. But most importantly, the one that is most important is the one about child care credit. That way, we're giving people the money to keep the money, and we can mitigate against inflation.
And then here's Republican candidate Tim Michaels.
What are some of the problems? Joe Biden, weak on inflation, canceling the Keystone Pipeline. What can we do? We can put more money in people's pockets. I'm a businessman. I understand macroeconomics. I understand how to read a balance sheet. I'm going to do everything I can to put more money in people's pockets to help them with the price at the pump and the surging price of groceries. We're going to do massive tax reform, get more money in people's pockets here in Wisconsin, and the hardworking, tax-paying people of Wisconsin will spend more of that money on goods and services, helping make our economy here even more robust.
Now, both of them mentioning some tax cuts, putting more money in people's pockets, as Michaels put it, but that can increase demand, that can increase inflation. I don't know. Do governors really have a lot of policy tools in their toolkit, Maurice, to deal with something like inflation?
They have limited tools in their toolkit to actually sort of deal with that. But I think what really stands out in terms of, again, sort of the clip that you just played was in terms of the state income tax. I think Governor Evers mentioned he would, once again, provide some minimal, once again, sort of reduction. But for Tim Michaels, I think he's gone on the record by saying he would like to eliminate the Wisconsin state income tax altogether. And I think also during that debate later, he also addressed the rainy day fund that Governor Evers sort of touted that as a good thing in terms of that the rainy day fund for the state of Wisconsin is fully funded. And Tim Michaels responded by saying that just shows that government is taking in too much money. So I think in general for Governor Evers, he's looking at again, sort of an incremental way to see what the state can do to reduce inflation and the harmful impacts it will have on Wisconsinites. For the challenger, Tim Michaels, he's taking a much more bold approach to it by, again, proposing to eliminate the state income tax. And also what it sounds like is that he would also get rid of the rainy day fund.
On a national level, how are you seeing the two parties tackle or avoid, I guess, the issue of inflation?
On a national, it's in general, and history on this is not on the Democratic Democratic Party side. That in terms of inflation, the Democratic Party traditionally, and I'll just use once again, Democratic presidents, that when they were in office and inflation was high, it did not help them when it came time for re-election. So if we go back to just after World War I, Woodrow Wilson was hit with rising inflation. Warren Harding sort of won after that. Going back to the 1950s, President Truman had high inflation. Dwight Eisenhower came in and won. Same thing as we get to the 1980. Jimmy Carter did not just have inflation, he also had stagflation, which was something new at the time. And Ronald Reagan famously sort of pointed out his famous statement to the American voters, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And of course, Reagan won in a landslide. So nationally, if we use once again the national results and history, it does not look good for Democrats going into, once again, at least this midterm election.
We're talking about the economy and inflation as election issues. Maurice Shepherd is with us, professor of political science at Madison College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you rank inflation and the economy when it comes to casting your vote? Are they on your mind as you make a decision, or is there something else that gets out ahead of those issues? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you want to hear from candidates for governor, Senate, state legislature, you name it, when it comes to inflation? 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Maurice Shepherd, professor of political science at Madison College, looking at the economy and inflation, how influential they could be as issues in the midterms. You can let us know what you think at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Tim is with us on the road near Madison. Hi, Tim.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear. Go for it.
Good. I tend to be sort of a little bit right of center, but I vote for Republicans and I vote for Democrats. But I think I'm on a fixed income. I'm 72 years old. And it's no accident this inflation is happening, and it's hurting people like me. I did not care for Donald Trump as a president. Personally, I thought he was a scumbag, but he was an excellent president, in my opinion. And isn't it amazing how the day he leaves office, everything turns south as far as the economy is concerned? And I got to believe it's a plan. And it's a plan that has to be stopped, or this country's going into the ditch.
Tim, thanks for the call. I don't know about the plan part of the Maurice, but Democrats have to be worried that voters like Tim will associate inflation and blame it on Democrats.
Sure. And to follow up on what Tim is highlighting is that in terms of politics, one way to think about this is a lot of times we talk about abstract ideas, democracy, liberty, those sorts of concepts. But when we get to inflation, we're talking about something tangible that, as Tim pointed out, impacts, once again, people on a daily basis. And some of the data show that, particularly as you look at different voting groups, particularly for middle class and working class voters, it hits them really hard in terms of, once again, their quality of life and what they can do. And particularly in Tim's case, for those that are a bit older, again, maybe retired or about to retire, it hits them not just at the grocery store and at the pump, but also it will hit them in terms of medical care, medical services, and the prescriptions that they need. So for a voter like Tim, it's hitting him sort of double whammy. In terms of a conspiracy, I think what we probably are not appreciating in general, sort of, again, not any one group, but the historic nature of the pandemic, it really changed everything in a number of different ways. So if there is a conspiracy out there, I don't know exactly what it is, but I think we are still underappreciating the severity of the pandemic on our economy, on politics, and on society.
Thanks for the call, Tim. Deborah is with us now in Winona, Minnesota. Deborah, hi.
Hi. My issues are a little bit different than what your guest is talking about. For me, climate change is the big thing. And we don't even talk about the economic impact that has on people. The snow crabs in Alaska, completely destroying the crab fishery there. That's going to impact their economy a great deal. And then after the environment is women's reproductive rights and preserving our democracy. Right now there are a lot of forces trying to change voting rights and gerrymander districts and things. And I think those are my three main issues. Inflation for me is an international issue. And as
Deborah, I got you. We've got a lot of callers, and I want to bring Maurice in on that. Thanks for calling in. Economy and inflation, big issues. Maurice, they are clearly not the only things on the table here.
Correct. And I think Deborah did a good job of highlighting the fact that there will always be a disconnect between when we talk about a particular policy, if it's inflation or climate change, and how that relates to politics. Politics tends to be short-term in nature. We go from one election cycle to the next and that sort, while these policy issues that we have to deal with, again, climate change being very important along with inflation, those require long-term solutions. So there's always some, resistance there for short-term thinking politicians to engage in long-term action.
Thanks for that call, Deborah. Ben joins us now in Sparta. Ben, hi.
Hi. I think that the attempts on the part of the Republicans to tie inflation to government spending under President Biden and the Democrats, the majority of the spending that has increased the deficit is spending that occurred because of COVID, programs to offset the problems of COVID. And the majority of that spending, which benefited a lot of people and went back to the taxpayers, that occurred under the Trump administration and the Republican and Democratic Congress.
Ben, thanks a lot for that call. It gets into some nuance, Maurice, but I have seen the case made like, yes, we have inflation. Yes, some of it is because of the spending Ben mentioned, but we have very good employment numbers. In part, people argue because of that very spending. Are people balancing things in as nuanced a way as Ben is, do you think?
I think Ben is probably far ahead of the game in terms of, again, looking at a complex issue and sort of untangling it. I think the truth lies somewhere in the fact that for most Americans, and some of the polling, once again, will highlight this, that when you think of government, particularly big government, people think Democratic Party. So if there is a policy or something that is taking place in which government seems to either be the source of the problem or agitating the problem, then again, sort of the Democratic Party will get, again, the lion's share of the blame for that. For the Republicans, again, they've done a very good job of crafting a message that they are the party of business, of corporate America, and that they, quote unquote, solve problems. Now, if that's truly the case or not, that's not for me to say, but I think that's the general message that most Americans have. If government is bad, they link it to the Democratic Party.
Thanks for that call. Diane joins us now in Fitchburg. Diane, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to make a point that I believe a big problem with all of this overall plan is profiteering. The fact that we see gas shortages or gas prices going up or wheat shortages or with cars, circuit shortages, and prices go up, but then they never seem to come back down. And I see this as part of the American success story that, you make a big amount of money here, there, or wherever, and that's idolized.
Diane.
And it's at the expense of us.
Diane, country. Thanks for the call. Marisa, just cutting off because we don't have a ton of time left. Some polling suggests that I think some 70-some percent of people say blame in part corporate profiteering for inflation. 60-some percent also blame the Biden administration. But who people blame may be a factor in their political decisions.
Right. And I think, Diane, again, sort of focused in on a key issue that what we're going through right now, part of this will be maybe temporary. I looked at some recent reporting and analysis that actually what we're experiencing right now in terms of inflation will subside within the next 6 months or so. But she also highlights the importance of, and I am not an economist, mm-hmm. but in the economic literature, they call it sort of rent seeking, again, getting these extra benefits, or as Diane put it, profiteering. And this is something that just simply needs to be worked out. I am not an economist, so I'm not going to sort of go down that
sure.
road, but I understand exactly what Diane is saying.
Diane, thanks a lot for that call. Maurice here in Wisconsin, there is a booming growth industry in campaign ads. Are you expecting to see a lot of attention, especially from the major statewide candidates, on the economy and inflation in the remaining few weeks?
Yes, for many of the races here in Wisconsin, almost all of the other than again, for the congressional race, I think the third congressional district, La Crosse, that's going to be competitive. Again, the gubernatorial race and also, again, the race for Senate, those will also be once again competitive. So, I think the advertising and promotion will just increase. The money will continue to flow in, and it will be very intense as we get closer to Election Day.
Maurice, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Maurice Shepherd, professor of political science at Madison College. We talked to them about the politics of the economy and inflation and how much of a factor they could be in the midterm election campaigns.